Conductor James Conlon is dedicated to keeping alive the memory of composers who were repressed by the Nazis. His Breaking the Silence series at Ravinia and his Recovered Voices series at LA Opera are programs that showcase music by underappreciated German, Austrian and Czech composers such as Franz Schreker, Erwin Schulhoff and Alexander Zemlinsky. Speak with Conlon about his formative years and he will quickly credit his early interest in music to being educated in the New York public school system at a time when there were robust arts and music programs. As his own career has blossomed, he's been a constant advocate for arts education and has made a recent public appeal to preserve arts programs in the financially troubled LA public school system, as he explained to me the last time he was in Philadelphia.
Over the course of the last 30 years, arts programs have been cut on the idea is that it's a frill or it's expendable. Now, I know at my age I don't need to worry about my education, but I do worry about the education of young people, and I worry about the fact that we've lost at least a generation, if not a generation and a half already, to adults who are otherwise educated, but have had limited, far too limited, exposure to classical music, classical ballet, including classical literature. I mean, I include it all. The whole idea that somehow schools are there so that you can get an education and get a job is, in my opinion, unworthy of the full goal of education. The point of education is to make educated minds of an entire citizenry, the entire country. Now, when you get that kind of education, you are a full human being, and we would all be the better for it if the whole country had that kind of education. When I see arts being cut in school, it makes me very sad because there's never been a society without music. And there is a very important role that classical music plays, should play, and can play, and would play if it were a standard part of our education. We had it, we've lost it. We have to get it back, so we certainly can't cut anything that's there.
The usual argument goes, though, that arts education doesn't really have a constituency, that it doesn't buy you any votes, that when politicians stand up and talk about the arts, they talk about it as an engine of economic development rather than, or an engine for tourism development rather than an actual humanitarian pursuit.
Well, that's true. Now, of course, a piece of music, a Beethoven sonata, does not have to justify itself to someone and to say, well, I can make money if I learn this Beethoven sonata. It's a work of art. And in general, the only things that survive centuries are works of literature, pieces of music, a great art. You know, all the famous people, the great generals, the kings, the politicians, everybody comes and goes, but art remains. And I think that various unjust and unjustified critiques of art are made on the political spectrum, and sometimes both sides of the political spectrum. The question that it's for elite, well, that's nonsense. It's for everybody. Every human being is capable of loving classical music, and that's on the one side. On the other side, the question of relevancy has been brought up as if its relevance is as if it has to be just like everything else in our contemporary society in order to be relevant. And that, of course, is a basic misunderstanding of the function of classical art, classical music, classical literature, which is valuable precisely because it is not exactly like our modern life. It's there as an accomplishment from the past that continues to shed light on our lives and will shed light in the future. I mean, the assumption is that if a novel, if a piece of literature, if Dostoevsky or Goethe, Shakespeare has existed and been read and seen and felt by generation after generation, the chances are it has something really important and universal to say. In fact, they're not chances. It's so.
You talk about the fact that classical music has endured and it's one of those markers from history. It's also an enduring passion of yours, the rediscovery of underappreciated classical music from the middle part of the 20th century.
Well, I think you're referring to Recovered Voices, which is a term, actually, we invented it at Los Angeles Opera, but what it's concerning is the vast volume of classical music that is unknown or rarely played today from composers who were suppressed either physically or emotionally or professionally during the Nazi regime. this enormous volume of music fell out of the repertory anytime after 1933. And for various historical reasons, never came back, largely because there was nobody there to defend it or people who knew and cared about it at the end of the war. This has consumed me in the last 20 years as a burning issue, because we are not talking about fringe composition. We're talking about composers who were deeply integrated into what was going on. I mean, not many of these composers came right out of the circle of Mahler. Some were more lucky than others and survived. Some died in concentration camps. Some immigrated. Every story is different, but there's a common thread, and that is that the listening public and practicing musicians were not exposed to this music, and therefore they do not, that they simply don't know that it's there, and they simply don't hear it. Now, this started more or less 20 years ago when I fell in love with the music of Alexander Zemlinsky, whom I think is one of the greatest of these composers and whom I knew only as a name. And when I suddenly heard music and attached to that name, this was a sort of an opening to me, and I started reading about him. And then when you start reading about him, I started reading all sorts of other names that meant nothing to me, Franz Schreker, and then I moved on to the composers that were in Terezin and the Victor Ullmann, Hans Krause. The story got bigger. And, of course, also to see the aspect of some composers we know, like Kurt Weill, like Korngold, that we understand the context from which they came. And we also become familiar with the music that they wrote in Europe, which is different from the music they wrote when they were in America. It's a vast subject. And we've allowed ourselves to settle into concepts about what is 20th century music, which is incomplete. But I believe it's the mandate of a historian, if and when new information comes up about something in the past, whether it be the Chinese Empire or the Persian Empire or the Civil War or last year's election, whenever something new comes in, it should force us to reevaluate our own understanding of the past. The 20th century, the history of classical music of the 20th century, has been written, so to speak, with an enormous omission. The existence of this, of these composers and the composition is in fact very important, and it needs to be known. The music needs to be played.
How well has this progressed over 20 years? Clearly some of those names you mentioned we have heard of, and perhaps we'd heard of them even before 20 years ago. What does success look like for this?
Well, there's no question that there's progress. I mean, I see more and more people performing some of these composers, and also a lot of people contact me and tell me that they want to. Very often now young conductors come to me and say, I heard your performance or your recording of Zemlinsky or Schreker or Schulhoff and something that got me interested, and I'm doing it now. That gives me a lot of satisfaction. This mission will not be accomplished in my lifetime. It will be a life's mission for me. What I am concentrating on now very heavily is education, because young people in conservatories and universities are very open. They're like sponges. And they are able to learn this and assimilate it without, at the same time that they're assimilating Brahms and Stravinsky.
And without the prejudices or the filters that older people might have.
Right. Well, I don't think older people have prejudice. I think there's some cliches. The people think if you don't know something, it isn't good. You know, there's the cliche, there are no lost masterpieces. That cliche, I think, represents a sort of intellectual lassitude. Of course, it's nonsense. Every war in history, back to the cavemen, have, in addition to the loss of human life, there's been loss of art, there's been loss of cities, architecture, buildings, paintings, I mean, everything. I mean, wars are catastrophes, and of course there are lost masterpieces. I mean, what do you want to say to, there's no such thing as, what about all the pre-Columbian art that we have, that was lost and found? People think of it differently with music, which I don't think they should. I mean, it's really the same phenomenon. Music has to be played. If it is banned, and it was banned, nobody plays it. It also means that the next generation doesn't know it because they didn't hear it. Classical music has been passed on from generation to generation over 200, 300 years. And that's why it needs to be played in order to be passed on. Just as we were speaking about education in schools, it's the same also in musical education. So there's, a critical need for this to be brought back so that it takes its proper place. I'm not advertising it for more than it is, but it has a proper place in our repertory. Not on the side as an oddity, right in the center.
LA Opera music director James Conlon. And you can hear him conducting LA Opera's production of Così fan tutte, this afternoon at 1, right here on WRTI.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.